Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion. This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, and I'm Zeph. No Eric, but Eric fans, you baying mob, you be still. He will be joining us on this, our second annual Best Of special. Now, nothing's happened to him. He and I are just taking a little time off in the summer. Though unlike him, I'm the one left with hosting this little look back on the last year. Now, if you're a long-time listener of the pod, well, here's some trivia. That is exactly how I started last year's Best Of show. Now, shelve your comments about a dearth of creative spirit. As you'll find out over the next hour, there's plenty about the show that defies creativity. So maybe you should just reach for some spirits as we spend the next 60 minutes or so looking back over the last year via just a few snippets of our accumulated wit and wisdom. Perhaps the biggest development on the show was moving into our new studios. Yes, just like real media outlets, CNN, the BBC, there's nothing like moving into new digs to somehow reassert your importance. Or should that be self-importance?
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I am no longer in the basement studio.
Well, not the basement studio. I think it's a new basement studio, although it's a different kind of basement.
It is a different kind of basement in that it has windows, and right. So therefore it's probably not a basement. Would I be correct there?
No, I think it's still a basement because it's one of those deals where the front of the house is underground and then the ground goes down, and so the back side of the basement is all open like a regular floor of the building, so it's still in a basement. I mean, the foundation is made of cement and all that sort of stuff, but it's like a regular part of the house.
So it's semi-basement.
I guess. I think it's called a walkout basement, although I guess a lot of basements are called walkout basements if they just have a doorway or something like that. But
all I know is I'm sitting here and there's a great big window and I can see outside and I can see things lower than me.
That's right.
So
yeah.
At some level, I always think if I'm in a basement, then ground level is above me. But today, ground level is below me.
Yeah, I mean, so it's not quite the same thing. I do like keeping the name of the basement studios. I mean, the other thing that's different, of course, is we have carpeting, we have walls, there's lighting on the ceiling, not like a typical setup where the rafters are exposed. We don't have a laundry machine behind us. There's a door on our room, so we are separated out from the air conditioning unit and all the other things that we used to have to run around and turn off in order to do our broadcasting.
Basically, this has been a long bit of shtick to say that we've moved into new studios.
Right.
We haven't actually said that. We are now in new studios, so it means that our opening credit emanating from the basement studio is kind of incorrect. We're in new studios, and because you are the landlord for our different studio premises, perhaps you would like to explain why and not exactly where we are so you're not stalked by crazy people, but exactly why we are now in new studios.
Because I have moved homes myself and the rest of my family have moved into a new home, and so new basement studios. So
I saw all the various interns' equipment being upstairs when I arrived.
Moved is probably too generous a statement. We are now sleeping in a new locale. However, lots of boxes full of stuff still. I think we've basically got the main floor unpacked. I mean, moving is just one of the least pleasant things anybody can have to go through. It does make you think a lot about how much junk you've accumulated and how many things you don't use, but it's the wrong time to do it because you're trying to get done. Like, we did get rid of a lot of things along the way, but really,
I was just about to ask, did you throw a lot of stuff out when you moved?
Tons, and giveaways, you know, I don't know if you know.
Oh, you were giving stuff away?
Yeah, we
must have missed that day.
I
don't have anything.
We gave it to charity. You're not tax deductible if I give you things. Although maybe you would be, I don't know.
Yeah, but I'm a charitable cause.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, trust me, the things we were giving away weren't necessarily things you would want, but we made multiple runs to Goodwill. I mean, we had some days where we'd be over there twice or three times bringing things over there. So that was part of the moving process. And then you get to your location, and as you see, the other inhabitant of the basement studios, or new basement studios, we haven't come up with the title for it yet.
We are going to come
boxes.
To that. I do see the boxes.
Right.
Well, I'm talking
meaning,
about
meaning
the,
full boxes. We haven't gotten around to emptying. We did empty a bunch out, and this community we now live in has a nice message board, and somebody basically was looking for boxes, and literally the day we unpacked a bunch of boxes, they came and took all our empty boxes away for them to pack up a bunch of things at their house.
Well, I want to say this because I'm now looking at a pile of boxes, and everything is marked. Clearly, you're a very organized mover. Everything says either fall or Christmas on it. So I have a funny feeling that there's a box up here that just says reindeer antlers.
Yes, it
does. I'm still surprised that that actually didn't make the cut to go to Goodwill. Because if you said you were throwing out a lot of stuff.
You know perfectly well what the reindeer antlers are. They were not going to Goodwill.
So basically, I'm looking at all these boxes, and it does appear to me here in a beautiful September day that you're not getting around to these boxes for another couple of months.
No,
it's all fall and Christmas.
They're all decorations and things like that. And it just so happens that the basement studio, or new basement studio, we'll get the...
Lakeside studio.
Because
I need to tell people, I am now looking straight out the window, and I can see water and trees. It looks very pastoral, very Turner painting.
It's very soothing. Hopefully it doesn't take our edge off or anything.
Oh, I hope not. No. Oh, God, no. Not with some of the stuff I've got written down here. But I actually like, if we just say we're in a basement studio... Well, then we haven't moved. Every proper media empire makes a big hoo-ha when they move. Like, they've got a new set, or we've moved to our new full-time scores control room, all that type of thing. We're in new studios. Yeah. I think we should be very upfront about that.
But you don't think... I was just thinking new basement studios. The new basement studios. You know, like it's... Like New York versus York, right? You know, it's just a new place, but it's an echo of the old place.
So by extension, we are podcast immigrants.
Right.
Because we're now in the new basement studios.
That's all right.
I can live with that.
New basement studios. But in any event, the new basement studios has some other functions, just like the original basement studios was for laundry and other types of things. The new basement studios will also be what I would call a hobby room. But the other member of the household has been calling a craft room, which would be all of these decorations and things like that that she puts together and decorates the house, or will decorate the house when we have enough furniture and things like that. But
well, which is it going to be? Because to be honest with you, I already have a strong feeling as to which way the room should be monikered.
Yeah, I'm of course leaning towards hobby room because it fills all the functions. It's going to be used for that. It's also where I've got like my camera and photography gear and other things like that that I manage to waste time when I should be doing other things.
Well, in this instance, I'm going to have to disagree with you.
You like craft room better?
Well, I like craft room a bit more. Not because there aren't other things that are going to go on here, but hobby room all sounds a bit fishy.
Hobby room is a little bit of a weird
word. People always say, oh, yeah, is that his hobby? And you sort of say stuff like that if you're trying to be, you know, like someone's up to something.
Oh, really? Like it has a nefarious connotation.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to use.
Huh.
Whereas craft is very clear. You're making stuff. It's creative.
Yeah, but
is that his hobby?
I think of hobby as being, like craft would be... glue guns and things like that, but the hobby,
the box
covers a wider expanse of things.
So the reindeer antlers came fully constructed then? They weren't attached with glue guns or anything?
No, I don't think so. I think they were fully assembled originally. But a hobby like this, what we're doing here is a hobby, although in a moment we'll discuss about how for somebody it seems to be becoming a profession.
We will get to that.
But I think of this as a hobby, just like other hobbies. But in any event, for our purposes, it's the new basement studio. So it's not going to change in anything.
You know something?
I'm okay with Lakeside Studios, too.
We'll let things
evolve.
No, you've convinced me on new basement studios.
Right?
But I will change the intro just to say something about the fact that we're next to a lake.
Yeah, all right.
Because I think that's impressive.
What you can't say anymore is the dark recesses, right?
Exactly.
Because there aren't dark recesses anymore.
Exactly.
There's actually light coming in through the window in the basement studios.
And here's the point. If you're not going to boast about moving into a nice house with waterfront property, well, that's not going to stop me boasting about working here. But I'm not interested in moving to it. Oh, what's your new studio like? Yeah, it's just like the old one. No way, man. Our new studio overlooks water.
Yeah.
I'm a big...
It's not nearly as dramatic as that sounds, but it's not bad.
It's not as dramatic because there is a box with the words reindeer antlers on it that's blocking my view out the window.
I don't know if you can see the line below reindeer antlers, but it says turkey hat.
Oh yes. And I've worn one of those.
Yeah, that's right.
Knowing our own place in the world, by the lake, that's one thing. But knowing other places isn't exactly our strong suit. Let's start off in our World Cup preview special. Then we'll opine on the weather in Greece, the time in Russia, toys in Japan, and last but not least, where the dinosaurs lived. That from our December show about one of our favorite subjects, meteors.
This is one of the things I'm a little bit worried about in this podcast, because we're going to talk about these different countries. The English commentators, I wouldn't say it's
racist.
It's not racist because it's different countries, but it's a lot of stereotypes of different countries, not necessarily horribly negative, but they do.
English folks traffic in a bit more of that.
We've talked before about how in every soccer game.
I actually think it is horribly negative. A lot of these countries in the World Cup are crap. I mean, that's the bottom line. And we'll get to that.
I mean,
as countries. I mean, okay. Look at Brazil.
Yeah.
Poverty. Crime.
But that isn't bigotry or racism. That's like a societal judgment.
Well, no, I'm making it. That's the whole point of the World Cup.
But that's okay.
The whole point of the World Cup and international sport. Now that everyone, it's not like 300 years ago where you sailed around in galleons, fired cannons at each other, fought with, you know, muskets and big swords. Now, everyone in general, unless you live in Ukraine, everyone in general would relatively civilized with each other. The beeper's going off. You're going to queue up another song.
Yeah.
International sport is now the only way for countries to face off. So I get it all out of my system.
Yeah,
would you rather I was running up and down the street with the newsie?
The United States and Britain have kind of managed to face off in some other ways. Now, this does segue. I think this segues into one of the first topics, unless you had anything else we were going to talk about, is how to pick a team. I mean,
yeah.
Listen, at a basic level, obviously, everybody's listening to this, more or less, not everybody, but is in England or United States. So you should really pick your home team first. I was telling somebody about the plans to podcast and talk about picking a team, and they're like, well, what do you mean? You pick the U.S.? And we're like, well, that's not the point. It's not that you wouldn't root for your own team. It's how to pick other teams that you care about.
And again, we still have listeners around the world.
We do.
Only 32 teams make the World Cup finals. That's so right. There's a whole lot of countries who actually don't have any representation. So you do need to find a team. And if you're England or the US, in reality, you're probably not going to the final. So it is nice to pick. Everyone has a second team.
Sure.
As a way to sort of cash
in. And a lot of people in the US pick England as their second team. I'm not sure so many people in England would pick US as their second team. You have to tell me you as an expat may, you know.
I do as an expat. I mean, I do feel, but that's because I live here. I think if the Atlantic voice emanated from, I don't know, South Korea, and it was the Pacific voice, we might be getting behind, you know, whatever. I mean, but I want to see the US do well, although not so much this time, because I don't like the coach, but that's a whole separate discussion. But I'll also have a third team, because there's no point having your second team be in the same boat as your main team. And as I just said, both England and the US are probably not going to be going to the World Cup final.
No.
So it will be nice to get another team.
Yeah,
so you have some thoughts for how to pick another team?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you've got to, there's obviously a lot of societal aspects of the different teams that might align with your interest, or maybe the team, the way it plays. I mean, for example, if you're in favor of school uniforms,
okay,
or you organize your sock drawer by colors and then subgenres of colors, you might be a fan of Germany. You like a good organization. You
know, retentive, I think, is the word you're looking for. Yeah.
you might want something that's organized and systematic. Now, mind you, that's more about German society than it is about the team at the moment. The team historically...
Yeah, but you want to pick a team that's like you.
Yeah, the team historically been like a number of these things. The stereotypes don't entirely hold true for because what's happened over the past bunch of years is the team's historic identities have broken down.
Yes.
Like historic identity of Germany would have been totally strict, you know, position play and things. Well, maybe not position play, but organization. And over the past few years, partly underneath the coach Jurgen Klinsmann, they brought in a lot of different sort of attitudes. They play more of an upspeed game now and things like that. On the other hand, Brazil, which I should have said, if you're a fan of UNC or UK, meaning Kentucky or Duke in college basketball, go ahead and pick Brazil here. Clear front runners. They're very good. They're very likely to be in the final.
Yeah. If you're the sort of person, if you're a bandwagon jumper, then Brazil is the place to be.
You can't say they're bad and they're interesting to watch, but it's everybody picks them. You know, what's the excitement in that?
I probably wouldn't recommend you live there, but for the sake of the World Cup,
I think that's the same thing as Kentucky and North Carolina.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. So topic number one is the fact that it's the Winter Olympics, which to me is almost like an oxymoron. You know, like the Olympics are based on these ancient Greek games that did not involve snow or ice or anything like that.
There's no snow in Greece.
Is that true? I guess it's probably no snow. It's certainly warm. It's Mediterranean.
I think that's a nice stereotypical statement to say about Greece, in the same way that people go, oh, yeah, do you guys eat heroes?
I'm trying to think if they have a mountainous area that has, like, snow-capped mountains. Yeah. You know, it's certainly not, like, a place that has snow on a regular basis.
Anytime I see those pictures of, like, Greek gods, they're not wearing a lot. So I cannot imagine that the climate was that negative.
They're not wearing furs or anything like that.
No. And to be honest with you,
but I think they're going to show watch it all the stream now. Stuff is going to be live.
Yeah, but I'm not getting up in the middle of the night to watch Nordic combined. What do I care? If I think the sport is crap to start off with and it's only of interest to like seven countries,
what's the time difference?
Why am I getting up at 5 in the morning
to watch
it? What's
the time difference of Sochi, you think?
Well, I think it's like Tuesday already, isn't it? This is one of our Sunday shows.
It might be one of your better jokes ever. Like it's like Tuesday. Right? Of course, nobody knows that right now it's Sunday that we're doing this. So this joke will make no sense because when we release it on Tuesday, people will be like, oh, of course, it is Tuesday.
But most people won't listen until the end of the week and they'll
exactly.
go, oh,
yeah. But that was a pretty good joke, other than the fact that we have a lack of context.
And I think that's a relatively recent addition.
How do you know it's not just
a Pikachu
elf.
One? You know, the Pikachu from...
And Machu Picchu. Didn't the aliens build that too?
No, you know, it's the Japanese video game thing.
Well, Hello Kitty?
I think they have one of those too, but no, Pikachu's the yellow rabbity thing that chases the ball around.
Yeah, and I know what you're talking about,
Why am I forgetting what the name of that
is? I don't know.
There's an overall name for the thing. Pikachu is the character, but it's something else.
I don't think we have any listeners in Japan. We actually have a few listeners in South Korea, so I don't want to suddenly get into something where I'm, you know, making vague statements about confusing countries. The Japanese Pokemon. The Japanese basically have all these cartoon characters, none of which really resemble a living animal. Right. Whereas Disney, Simpsons, Family Guy, Charlie Brown.
They're like the Island of Dr. Moreau cartoons or something like that.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Everyone else has identifiable cats and dogs and bears.
Yeah.
You've just talked about like a funny sort of rabbity thing. But he might not be a rabbit. The cat looks like a cat.
He could be a hedgehog or something.
Yeah, it could be anything. And I find it interesting that Japan, like, we don't need to deal with regular living animals.
I saw some story about Hello Kitty recently. Like, it originally was just released on this tiny little toy. It was just a picture on a toy. And somehow it became like this overall brand everywhere.
Oh, good on them.
Yeah.
Nuclear bombs or asteroids, which would you rather try and survive through?
Again, if they're the same size, I'm going with the asteroid.
Why? The asteroids just killed the dinosaurs. Those things are huge compared to us.
Yeah, well, a nuclear bomb the size of that would probably light the entire atmosphere on fire.
The correct answer is I would rather avoid both cataclysmic events. Well, that's actually the correct answer.
Oh, okay. All right. But that created the space on Earth for mammals. Not meaning the physical space, but the room for the mammals to then grow because, of course, with another large animal on the Earth, it kind of kept down mammals.
Seeded this by the water from outer space. Again,
see, the mammals were already there. Now, if you want to talk about a potentially valid theory of yours...
No, but in a moment. I'm just not convinced that one asteroid... There must have been dinosaurs living everywhere. All over the Earth.
Most of it.
Dinosaurs living in Africa.
Really one
Australian dinosaurs. European dinosaurs. Russian dinosaurs.
Oh, there is still a Jurassic period.
Dinosaurs everywhere. I'm just not convinced that one asteroid that didn't leave a whopping great big hole in the Earth, and I'm not talking about like a big crater. I'm talking about a hole like if you were out in outer space... Earth wouldn't be round, there'd be a big chunk out of it. I can't believe that just one big asteroid wiped out the international community of dinosaurs. I understand it might have killed all the dinosaurs in that place, in the Yucatan Peninsula. But if I'm like one of the Russian dinosaurs, I'm not affected by any of this.
You are.
All right.
I mean, it puts so much stuff into the atmosphere that it covered the Earth.
All right. But without taking a big chunk out of the Earth, so that from space the Earth looks like an apple with a bear out of it. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
All right. People want to believe that. What do your eyes tell you?
What do your eyes tell you?
My eyes tell me if something that big hit the Earth, Earth still wouldn't be round after.
Well,
the Earth would have some damage in it.
It rerounds itself. All right. That's what gravity and everything.
Again, these are a lot of these convenient ways that scientists answer questions that they don't.
We're going to have you go to the Wikipedia page for.
Oh, that's right. I'll buy Wikipedia. Earth. Yeah, let's do it.
Just so you can organize your steps. You don't have to get the specific facts, but you know, I hesitate to even raise this because
I'm a conspiracy.
You take it all the wrong directions there. But
don't need my facts.
But historically, you know, we always think of the dinosaurs obviously predating human life and all that sort of stuff. But we underestimate.
Except in that movie with Raquel Welch, they're on the planet at the same time.
We underestimate the degree to which it did. Like, you know, if you look at if you said history from the beginning of the dinosaurs to now is a 24-hour day, I think in round figures, basically, the dinosaurs would have been here for 18 hours, and we arrived in the last 10 minutes. Okay. Like, it's like the difference amount of time
is
just so vast.
No, that
like,
is a good answer, yeah.
It's not like, oh, you know, the dinosaurs had an hour and we had an hour.
Which just surprises me that A, they didn't become more intelligent, and B, they were not made of hardier stuff. That the dinosaurs living on the other side of the world in Mongolia couldn't put up with a little bit of dust.
Apparently they didn't get the good alien DNA that was sent down there.
That's all I'm saying.
You know, they needed help with the alien helicopters so then they could build pyramids.
See, now you're just making fun.
Yes.
Now, we take great pride on our shows that cover multiple topics and great satisfaction in finding a way to tie those topics together. We love a good segue. And this Best of special, well, it shouldn't be an exception. So here goes. We just talked about dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. Now, you know who directed the film Jurassic Park? Steven Spielberg. On this clip from our February Lucky Dip show, we discuss Close Encounters of the Third Kind and give Mr. Spielberg a shout out. As you'll discover when you hear the Star Wars cut that follows, talking directly to our celebrity listeners is, if not a habit, most definitely a pattern. Yeah, I know. That was a pretty weak segue.
What was your tangent on Close Encounters?
Okay, I want to make a comment about Close Encounters. One, it's a very unrealistic movie. And let me tell you why. Because in every other Aliens Visit Earth movie, the aliens are trying to take us out. How realistic? These aliens are not going to come and be our friends.
Why?
Once they arrive and figure out that we can't fly and stuff, they're going to be like, ooh, we need to change our friendship plan to taking over.
No, I don't think that's true. Think if we were to go to another planet now.
But let me tell you how else it's unrealistic. How would the aliens know to communicate with us by a music? Because the whole conceit of the show is it's the music notes. I don't get that. But I just have a couple of criticisms. I'm not criticising Spielberg, very talented director. But I do feel at a certain
base
level.
Do you want explanations
level,
or are you going to forge?
No, I'm going to forge too, and then I'll let you come back for explanations. Because I want to get all my thoughts out right
I'll
here.
I'll explain the notes.
Two, did you know that Steve McQueen was the original choice for that film?
You mean the Richard Dreyfuss
role? Richard Dreyfuss character. And Spielberg sent him the script and chased after him. And McQueen did the dance for a while and then he finally turned it down. And I wish I could remember why he turned it down. But McQueen was Spielberg's first choice. It was a consensus choice between Spielberg and I think Warner's, because McQueen had done some work for Warner's over the years. McQueen was the first choice for the Richard Dreyfuss character.
I think it would have been more serious. Like, I could totally see that, in a way.
Sort of every man. Because he was older then. He was 50. I also think part of it, too, is he was quite sick with his cancer, because it was about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It was one couple of years before his death. So I don't know why but not. But
when Richard Dreyfuss starts going all frenzied and he's building the mashed potato and the thing in the bedroom and all this, it's a little bit comical. You know, like, he's just kind of wacky. And I think in the hands of Steve McQueen, it might have been a little bit more sinister, is not the right word, but foreboding or a little bit more heavy.
So anyway, back to my point about Close Encounters. When you said it's not on TV. There was the original Close Encounters. Then about 3 years later, Steven Spielberg did his director's cut. The director's cut is the one where at the end of the movie, Dreyfuss's character goes into the spaceship and you see inside the spaceship.
In the original, he goes in, but you don't see it.
You can never see, and this is my same beef with Star Wars special editions. I actually think that the first version is superior because I don't want to know what's in there. Especially, I'm just talking about the end now. I don't want to know what's in there.
There's also like a ton more time of the thing getting there. Like, there's a lot of extra stuff.
And there's a scene where they find a boat in the middle of the desert. That's not in the original.
Yeah, right.
You always see the special edition on TV. You never see the original anymore. And I don't know if maybe that's a rule that when a director does it,
And it says, you know, here's what I'm going to give you the license to use on your TV shows only if you use the.
But I do want to say this about Close Encounters.
It's really long with commercials.
I do want to say this about Close Encounters. I like, forget all the other stuff up until the ending, which are all legit criticisms that you made about it takes too long and everything. I don't want to know what's in the spaceship. There's no sense of wonder for me.
Yeah, I buy that.
The film should end where he goes in and that's it.
I remember when I saw it originally as a kid, you wanted to know, but
I'm not
as it's not as interesting an art piece if you basically, you know, you were to show the other end.
So again, a big fan of Steven Spielberg, but I think you got that one wrong.
Okay, so a couple more
things. So if you do listen, please feel free to comment Steven Spielberg or call us.
By the way, yeah, part of this we should talk about, I'll
write that down on tangential.
Yeah, tangential emails. The notes. I think the theory is now, I will say there's a gap in this to me, but there's the theory is that notes as a basic element of frequency of sound is sort of a fundamental item that
when we talk space, no one can hear you scream and they cannot hear you play music. Yeah, that's from Alien. There's no sound in space.
Right. But people.
So why would they communicate with sound?
Well, because they came from somewhere with an atmosphere. Anyway,
it's a lot of
colors. So the theory is it's supposed to be some basics, just like a basic set of colors, right? It's something that can be consistent from place to place. Now, how you form those into language, you know, when we're talking now in our words, is a lot of complicated stuff that does that. And so what they were trying to do is distill out of that simplicity. Now, what I never understood is how do you end up teaching somebody that language? And then when they did the whole bit where they
said hand signs and everything, seriously,
the hand sign was a little goofy. I thought that was kind of weird, but anyway,
and then the aliens doing it as well, and I'm like, seriously, how's he gonna know that this is what the and the other fellow's not even American?
I'm not defending it the whole way. I'm defending it half of the way. Other thing is, you said they're all going to come attack us, and they're going to all do that sort of stuff.
Let me name the movies where aliens get out of control.
But
Independence Day, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Predators, Aliens, any movie where there's some sort of interaction between alien beings and people, it ends badly.
Right, but those are movies.
Well that's the only experience we have with aliens.
Right. So, entirely likely. I mean, you'd figure a bunch of times maybe that's exactly what would happen. They come and they steal your resources. But imagine if we, as a species, humankind, went to another planet.
Okay.
I don't think we would take all their resources.
I don't know what planet you're on.
Well, I think we would. We're now at the point of some level of enlightenment as to humanity and how to treat things and all that sort of stuff, that it would be very unlikely that we would simply go conquer another nation.
So
we've learned some lessons along the way.
Okay.
And I think that means it's at least plausible that some other society would have learned its lessons, and so the idea of assuming that they couldn't come here peacefully, I think, is incorrect.
All right, let's hope so. Because all I know is any time there's alien abductions, someone ends up having someone shoved up their bugle. I do want to make a quick comment, because I did criticize Spielberg earlier. I do want to say this. The scene where the little boy is taken from the house, isn't it, for a film? Like, again, I'm not a horror film fan. I've only seen The Exorcist once. I've seen The Omen a couple of times. I don't Amityville Horror, all these modern ones. I don't do horror films. I watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and even now as an adult, scares the crap out of me when they take the little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that says, even though I've criticized Steven Spielberg earlier for his special edition, hats off to Steven Spielberg for that scene. Great suspenseful scene.
I think what makes that part really weird is that
the screws, the washing machine going off.
And the kid seems not really scared. Like, you know, like a kid, if that sort of stuff, a normal kid would be scared. But instead, the kid's got the things in his head just like everybody else.
He's too young to be scared. He doesn't know that when he goes up to the spaceship, someone's going to be sticking something.
No, somebody's like rattling on your door and doing this stuff. You're going to be scared. Yeah, if you're a kid, you're scared.
Yeah,
you'd be hiding with mom. Particularly when mom acts scared, you're going to act scared too. But again, they were doing something with their minds, and so the kid came along just like what's-his-name was making his mashed potato, Pike's Peak.
So are we ready?
Pike's Peak? No, it's not Pike's Peak. It's
Devil's
Knob.
Isn't it Devil's Tower? It's Devil's Tower. It's actually a place. It is a place in Wyoming, yeah. So are we done with Close Encounters?
I think so.
I do want to say...
More than enough tangent.
Great movie. Plot holes everywhere. Which proves my original point, very unrealistic. Please share with our listeners and our guests the big news for Star Wars. We haven't done any Star Wars news in about six months.
Well, no, it's big news.
I'm going to come very strong with the take in a moment.
I mean, are we talking about the same thing?
What was the Star Wars news 6 months ago?
Well, that it was coming back.
Okay.
I don't know what you're alluding to.
The new director.
Yeah, Rian Johnson.
So he did the movie Looper, which is very good. I enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it a couple of times. If you haven't watched it on streaming cable television.
What's it called?
Looper. With Bruce Willis and Jonathan Gordon-Levitt Hewitt.
I did see that. That was a good movie.
Good movie, yeah. Cool. And Emily Blunt was in it.
I think that's right.
All right. So are you ready for me to come strong on the Star Wars?
I thought J.J. Abrams wasn't...
He's doing the next one.
He's doing the... So there's 7, 8, 9 are coming out. J.J. Abrams is doing 7.
That are done.
No, I mean, they're going to come out over the next, like, 6 years.
They've been made or something?
No, not made. It's really just still... Like, so J.J. Abrams doing 7. They recently did announce that a couple new stars, the woman... Did we already talk about this?
No, we haven't.
The woman from Game of Thrones, a really tall woman from England. She plays Brienne of Tarth. She's like... some sort of Nordic 6'8" woman. She's going to be in the new Star Wars 7.
I'm looking at you, Nod, and this is Greek to me.
Yes.
Nordic, 6'8", Game of Thrones.
I forgot her name.
Narnia.
And the Lupita, I don't know how to pronounce her name, from 12 Years a Slave.
Okay, yeah.
She's going to be in the new Star Wars also.
Right. But all the old crew are going to be in Star Wars as well. Because I heard that Harrison Ford broke his ankle. No, the old crew.
Like Harrison Ford.
Why are they bringing those guys back?
I think just a bridge. I think they're only going to be in the first one. But
let me tell you why.
Isn't it like bringing Spock back during the last Star Trek? I think they're going to keep on bringing him back.
But I think they're going to have more for them to do. And let me tell you why. That's because those three Star Wars movies, Harrison Ford just broke his leg. I was just about to tell you that. He just broke his leg.
So he must be doing something semi-active.
He was on the set of the Millennium Falcon, his spaceship. Han Solo's spaceship.
Yeah. And apparently, he got to keep it at the end of the show.
He just took it home,
just drove it off set.
Clearly, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to insult Harrison Ford in case he's listening. Well, clearly, the time travel aspect isn't helping him because he's not aged well.
He's pretty old. No, he's aged pretty well.
I'm sorry, I'm still laughing about in case he's listening.
All right, so that third voice you heard in that last clip, that was friend of the show, Cameron, who was our first ever in-studio guest. Now, how he ended up in the New Basement Studios by the lake was a direct result of my own attitude towards one or two of our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for having me. I've been quite critical of the show. that might be a nice way to put it. But the last three shows, I told both Eric and Zeph, were fantastic. Great subject matter, came to a point fairly quickly, and overall extremely entertaining. So I'm not sure what it means that I'm on the show now.
Yeah, what we're trying to do is co-opt you, and this way you can't.
Yeah, I can't tear it
because you know, you have actually, I would say, constructive criticism towards having shows with organization and a proper point. And, you know, we don't always do that because, you know, we have day jobs, you know, so it becomes difficult. But by bringing you in on, and as people will find, this is definitely a show without a point today. It'll make it more difficult for you to send in your complaints. You'll be saying, well, what about
because I'm a part of the problem, not the solution.
Exactly. It's the politics of it.
Or politics.
Great.
Okay. That's all very nice. Let me put it very simply. Cameron's on the show. Cameron is a guest on the show this week. He's what I call a spite guest. Because Cameron, as everyone has agreed, has been critical some weeks that we sort of weave around and we never come to a point or the show doesn't have any flow.
Let me interrupt for a second.
Hold on.
Because there was a show about Eric's cold.
Okay. That doesn't change right. Cameron is what we call a spite guest. And I'm going to challenge any of our listeners out there.
Who's the we in that? Who's the we?
Well, we is in the Eric and Zephyr Dealing Boys podcast. Yeah. Yeah. So for any of you out there that have, you know, sat by your computer and gone, what are these guys talking about? Come on down. Come on down the show, and then you'll see how difficult it is. So Cameron has criticized the show. We've put him here in front of a microphone.
Please don't come down. The idea of an open invitation for anybody who's listening to come here and join
in. Come on down.
I don't believe, no offense to them, I think it's our problem, mind you, but I don't know that will make us really better.
Come on. I'm always inviting people to email. Uh-huh. And now I'm inviting people to come on down to the show. Come on down to the show, and you'll soon find out.
It's like he's throwing a threat out there.
Right.
You want to be the outside?
That's right.
Yeah. So Cameron is our first
spiked
guest.
You think you can take me?
But I won't be spiteful during the show.
Oh, no, no.
I'm not spiteful. I don't think you're spiteful. And we in that is only Zeph.
Well, actually, no, I want to tie it up. I'm not suggesting Cameron is spiteful. This is a spiteful act our part.
Well, on your part.
We are being spiteful.
No, it's really.
We are being spiteful towards any listeners who are criticized us.
Yeah. It's you who's picking the fight.
Well, whatever. It's a we. It's a royal we. It's the New Basement Studio by the Lake. It's our media empire, which, before we continue, do we have any more updates on our YouTube channel?
No.
Now, in that little clip, Eric spent a lot of time trying to distance himself from my position. But listen to these next clips, and you'll find that Eric can sometimes be critical of our loyal and dedicated listeners too.
So, someone that we both know, she says, my New Year's resolution is to listen to your show.
Yeah, that's what I was going to...
Well, I was a bit put out that, in fact, this person who we've known for many, many years hadn't listened to the show before.
Right.
But nonetheless, I'm like, great, welcome aboard, glad you're finally listening. The person then says, well, your show is too long.
Oh, is that right? Did you say that?
Yeah, they complained that the show is too long. And at that moment, I thought I could defend the length of the show, but I thought it was just easier to throw you under the bus. So when they said the show is too long, I said, well, he does talk a lot about the facts because he believes in being factually correct.
Mm-hmm.
And because I felt like this was a criticism, as you weren't there, I was taking all the criticism personally, so I felt the thing to do was to deflect. So I then said, he does talk about the facts an awful lot. And then I pointed out, remember the show we did where you talked about the football player selling stocks in himself?
Yep.
I said, even during that show, there were a few moments when he was going on and I just started shoveling more candy because he even lost to me. I wanted to have empathy with our listener, with our new listener. Well, no, but that's not it. So she then says, well, I did. I said, so I go, well, how did you know that the show is too long? And she says, well, I listened to your show about the guinea pig or the hamster. So I say, the AV15.
Oh.
So I go, but that show's only 15 minutes. And she says, yeah, it's too long.
Well, that's a bad sign.
And so I just let it go after that.
Putting aside the moment that there probably wasn't, it was probably one of those AV22s or AV23s of yours, but...
Yeah, but that's still, it's no, less than half an hour.
Yeah, well, the thing is...
But I do want to say...
You don't have to listen to it all one sitting.
Well, I did explain that, but then I just felt it was easier just to blame you. But I want you to know... Because you do, I did stick up, after throwing you under the bus, I did stick up for you.
Uh-huh.
And I did say that, you know, you do believe in the facts. And so I don't want your confidence in any way to be affected by her criticism of our show.
I assure you it's not.
So that's my reason. Well, yeah. So anyway.
Whatever lack of confidence I had is the same lack of confidence I had beforehand. So it has not moved my confidence.
So anyway,
direction.
So we have picked up one listener.
Yeah, I thought she also, didn't she say, because I think she emailed to say, No, it was another person who said, well, is this an old one? Like, it was one of the holiday episodes.
That's
and
right,
they
yeah.
said, oh, is this a rerun? And we're like, we don't do reruns.
We don't do reruns. Yeah. It is interesting how few people
may do retreads. We may talk about the same topic over and over again, but it's always a fresh dialogue.
It's a fresh
dialogue.
Take. Yeah. Fresh takes. Yeah. So people do seem to... I'm a bit depressed that so many people I know are only now resolving to listen to the show. We've only been on for nearly 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand why people are only now getting around to, oh, my resolution is to listen to your show.
No, they may not have taken us seriously initially. They must have thought, oh, this is a... And once we got to this number of episodes, they're like, maybe I should listen to what these people keep saying they're doing.
I'm not too concerned. I'm glad that they're joining the party. But I want you to know their criticisms of you,
I appreciate it. Thank you for sticking up for your co-host.
Let you take it,
throwing me under the bus.
Don't let it
It's like a half and half kind of thing.
Well, yeah.
It's split the difference. I was thinking when we were thinking about doing this setup, I was thinking the other thing that would be really nice to do, but I don't know if we can get enough emails for it. I mean, we'd have to accumulate them over time.
Okay.
Is a mailbag. You know, like so many blogs and things have a mailbag column they'll do where everybody asks questions. And like, I thought two things people could do. People could suggest topics, which they never really do. Or just ask questions about things they've heard or just things they want to ask about. It'd be really kind of fun to do that.
I want to make a
plea. It'd be nice if somebody would send some emails.
I want to make
Atlantic Voice atlanticvoice@gmail.com.
Yes. All one word. Or just leave a comment on the blog.
Atlantic Voice, Atlantic
Voice. No, it's Atlantic Voice.
Atlanticvoice@gmail.com.
Or just leave a comment on the blog.
Yeah.
I do want to say this to our listeners.
Just email.
Please email us, because you're out there. We get a couple of hundred people an episode. Some episodes. Some episodes we don't. Some episodes we do. Mm-hmm. People are clearly listening.
Yeah.
Now, either the same people are coming back and listening,
or new people.
Well, I don't know about that. New people listening.
All the people in Pittsburgh listening to the puppet episode.
Please comment. All right, that's all I'm going to say.
I'd rather have the emails.
Right,
sorry, comments on the blog. I knew we talked about the one point, but nobody's
let
really
me,
using
let
the blog.
Let me rephrase that. Listeners, please communicate with us.
Questions, comments, and they don't have to be as sarcastic as the ones we recently got.
All right, you want to go? You want to analyze it?
Somebody, as again, complaining about, well, actually, they were talking about, you know, we did the...
Hey, a complaint is a communication. Is a COM at the start? What do I care?
But I think they're misplaced. That the one of the ones was, you know, we did that timing one on the on the Olympics where we give 10-minute times, and they were saying, oh, you should do it more like Pardon the Interruption, where you do it every 2 minutes.
But then we're ripping them off.
That's true. Yeah. So there could be an intellectual property issue there. But also...
Is it doing stuff against the clock?
I don't know. But anyway, every 2 minutes
would
be totally insane. There's just no way. We would have to line up 50 topics.
Yeah, forget that.
That's way too many things to deal with. But maybe that feeds into his other point, which he was suggesting half-hour episodes instead of our typical hour.
This has been a complaint that other people have brought.
But here's what I don't get about that complaint.
Defend it. Because he is not the first person to complain about the length of
the
show.
You're all listening on a device that has a pause button.
No, I know.
You're not required to listen to it all in one sitting. Like,
go
said,
off.
It's
get
not
it out.
Timely.
Get it
like,
off your chest.
If you want to listen to something, it's a half an hour. Listen for a half an hour and hit stop and then come back. I mean, I don't understand how complicated this is. It is not like they aren't sure they're sort of episodes, but you can just look at it as it's a substance. You know, it's.
Oh, I'm with you.
Broadcast stuff.
I'm with you.
I listen to tons of podcasts. They're almost always about an hour long, give or take. I listen to them when I commute into work, and my work commute doesn't take that long. And so, you know what I do? I hit pause. And if I feel like I'm not feeling like listening to the rest of it, I hit delete at the end of it, kind of thing, before I get to the very end. Go ahead and do that. Then you have your half hour episodes. You don't need us to make half hour episodes. You can make half hour episodes.
So what you're saying then is the person who commented/complained. What you're saying is he's an idiot. That's what you're saying.
No, I am not saying he's an idiot. I'm saying...
So again, please comment.
It's
please
not the only person
us.
Who's been like, oh, it's so long. Please. It's like, it's not mandatory. I mean, like,
please,
doesn't anybody
please
watch
email
a TV
us.
Show?
We won't hammer you on air.
Yeah. Right. Well, we're not hammering him by name.
No, but he knows who he is.
Yeah.
Now, Eric has complained a lot, both on and off the show, about last year's Best Of show. He said that it featured far too much of me. Now, that was probably a fair critique. I say somewhat, as I don't fancy giving him too much credit. So, here's a little more of Eric, this time taking a shot at budding actors.
Well, not necessarily, but it was just clips and things like that. I mean, the one that was rawest for everybody was Philip Seymour Hoffman, because here's a guy who wasn't, you know, it wasn't like he was at the end
of
his life kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah,
that too. I actually happened to see, Inside the Actor's Studio on Bravo.
Yeah.
Sort of a weird interview format show where
the guy sits in a chair.
Lipton. Is it Lipton?
James Lipton.
Yeah. He talks to everybody in front of the audience of kids who think they're going to become actors and clearly you're going to end up waiters and waitresses.
Yes.
Because
if you're in the acting class, then I'm telling you right now, you're not good enough to be an
actor. You know what they said?
That's the bottom line.
So Amy Adams was on.
Okay.
And they mentioned Brad Cooper went to that school.
Oh, he went to Georgetown.
Well, I mean, I think he went to some sort of actor studio training type of thing.
Yeah.
Because they mentioned him having, at one point in life, being in that audience.
But at the end of the day, that's great. But you know something? If he looked like you or I, he would not be a major star.
That's the bottom line here. You look at the people in the audience, and they do get up at the end, they have a couple of questions from the audience, and they'll say, oh, I'm a first-year screenwriter, and you are. Because you're like, you are not a first-year actress. You're a first-year screenwriter looking at you.
Ooh, that was a low blow. So let's hear my partner in a kind of light. Now, it is true on many shows, Eric does the research and provides the facts, while I just provide the commentary. But on this clip from our Animals in Space episode, not to be confused with our highly rated Puppets in Space episode, well, I did the research, via Wikipedia of course, and Eric got to make the jokes. I think that now leads to the fact that I've actually done some research for this episode.
I know. I'm impressed. There's a printout here.
I actually went to Wikipedia.
Which, once again, being the environmentalist that you are, is the backside is sports schedules or something like that.
I recycle, yes. I use both sides of the paper. Mm-hmm. And I actually just typed in animals in space. And there is a Wikipedia entry for animals in space. And as you can see, I printed it all up. It's 9 pages by the time you print it up.
A lot of animals.
About animals in space. And I had a good read, and I discovered that pretty much any animal that you can think of has been in space, including dogs, spiders, monkeys, frogs, mice, hamsters, guinea pigs, rabbits, insects, and fish.
Spiders and insects. I guess they probably just do that to see what they do. Like you know, like the...
Well, I'm going to read straight from the Wikipedia entry. In the 1940s, the first animals sent into space were fruit flies.
Was that a mistake?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is the thing. I'm trying to think, why would you send a fruit fly into space?
I don't know. They even seem hard to, like, handle. I mean, like, how would you get fruit flies in there?
Yeah, I guess you stick them all in a jar.
And they definitely cannot press buttons.
They can't press buttons, though.
No.
They can't. They're too small for a proper seatbelt. Or maybe they make very small seatbelts. I don't know. But how do you test? It's not like when it comes back, you can cut him up and see what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you do with these things.
Like the fruit fly comes back and it's a changed fruit fly. It's like 2001 Space Odyssey. Like it's gone off to some weird thing and that fruit fly now thinks it's
he's older than
God.
His brother. Or he's younger than his brother.
Exactly.
So over history, man has sent all manner of... Well, I mean, we always...
I've heard dog and monkey, of course. And monkey is obviously why you do that, is that it's the closest to people and you can figure out, you know, is everything going to function all right when I come back?
According to Wikipedia, the Russians had planned trips for 57 dogs.
In one trip or just...
No. It wasn't 57 dogs on one very big spaceship, but they had planned out 57 different flights...
In response to which...
We're going
to
take dogs. But apparently it wasn't 57 different dogs. There was like a team of dogs, rather like the Gemini or Mercury astronauts that would sort of rotate through. But they had a full schedule of sending dogs into space.
I like the visual of the 57 because then maybe like the response was, you know, the United States said, well, we're going to send 101 Dalmatians up or something like that.
Let me have a look here.
So 57 dogs. I mean, all right. I mean, I don't know what you learned on the 57th, right? That you didn't know by the 56th.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I've often wondered. Here we go here. In total, in the 50s and 60s, the Soviet Union launched missions with passenger slots for at least 57 dogs. The actual number of dogs in space is smaller because some dogs flew more than once. Well, I guess, did they put dogs side by side? Like in Apollo 13, was like Tom Hanks, Bill Paxton, and Kevin Bacon.
Navigator dog.
Have, like, three dogs.
Technology dog.
Doing different things.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I mean, you have to get, 57 dogs. That's a lot of dogs to keep busy.
Yeah.
Or a lot of missions for dogs. Let me see here. Monkeys, obviously, have been sent into space.
You want to say frogs?
Frogs.
Mice.
Rabbits.
Yeah, rabbits, I wouldn't know what you'd get out of that.
Now, there was an interesting thing here. It doesn't say how many monkeys have been into space.
Probably a lot of different types of monkeys, though. No gorillas, though. That'd be kind of tough to handle.
And they're very hairy, like that Persian cat, too. Very sort of... fluff.
Pretty much everything species. Except for people is hairy. And bugs. The bugs aren't hairy. But
yeah, I mean, the monkeys apparently were sent into space, and the monkeys actually tried to work some of the capsules.
Mm-hmm.
But what they did was, and I kind of think this is cheating, they trained the monkeys that certain buttons were like, give them an electric shock.
Right.
So that when they went into space, they would touch the right buttons.
Uh-huh.
Which kind of makes, I don't know, that feels like cheating to me.
But were the buttons actually doing anything, or is it just, can they remember to do the right buttons while they're in space and all disoriented?
Apparently it just said the monkeys were taught to use the controls by either avoiding buttons that would give them electric shock and then banana treats. But this being Wikipedia, it just says banana treats.
Hmm.
So I don't know if there was like a banana treat next to a button.
It's like a banana. It's not even, maybe not even a banana. It could be a banana flavored.
Let me see here. Oh, here's an interesting factoid about one of the Russian dogs. One of the Russian dogs that went up on Sputnik came back
and it bred puppies, and one of the puppies was given to Caroline Kennedy by Khrushchev.
Okay.
So Caroline Kennedy doesn't have like an astronaut dog, but she has the son of an astronaut dog.
Okay. But it wasn't like conceived in space.
No, I think, I mean, Wikipedia wasn't specific about that, so I don't know. I mean, I guess for our purposes, yes, it was conceived in space. I'm not going to make it. Because I can go on to Wikipedia and just change
much,
that.
It's no a much more interesting story.
Let me see. Chimps, rhesus monkeys. Now, I don't know. What's a rhesus? I don't know the difference between a rhesus monkey and a chimp.
Peanut butter inside.
Oh, very good. Yes, yes.
Reese's peanut butter cups. Very, very funny. Anyway, we are getting towards the end of this year's Best Of special. No comments from the back of the room. Last year, we finished with a montage of some bad impressions, mispronunciations, and some misguidedly ambitious attempts at singing. Like the dead person's montage in the Oscars ceremony, check out our Oscars review and our 12th of March episode for our thoughts on that. We figured that just going back to the well for another year would fit right in with how we do business in general. But in looking to find 5 seconds of me doing a bad Arnold Schwarzenegger impression, I found a whole discussion between my partner and myself debating either side of the Arnold or Sylvester Stallone comparison. So before your quick hits or quick miss hits, listen to Eric and I have, for what's an ultimately rare occasion, a quite reasoned back and forth. And then after that, you've got your assortment of half-hearted attempts at singing and half-heartedly disguised accents.
But speaking of time travel,
Terminator 4,
Terminator,
or 5, or 6. I don't know what it is now. They don't give it numbers because there's been so many different Terminators.
We went Terminator, we went T2.
T3 with the girl.
We did.
And then Terminator with Christian Bale.
But were there three of the regular movies before he went to the Christian Bale one, which was called Salvation, wasn't it?
I think so. I think it was three. There were three with Arnold, and then Arnold got the chop and was replaced by Christian Bale.
Well, that was sort of a rebooty. That was like a retro
reboot. Yes.
So now the talk is it a done deal?
I think it's going to
be called Terminator Genesis.
Terminator Genesis.
I guess it must be a done deal if it's got a title.
It is a done deal because Arnold's in it.
Yeah.
And the director is the dude who does Game of Thrones, which I know that's why I sent you the article.
Well, is that right? But I mean,
I don't know. I don't
see, like, TV shows don't have one director. They got lots of directors.
The director has worked, has been involved
one
heavily.
Of the people.
No, yeah, involved heavily with Game of Thrones. Okay. And they've already cast some people from Game of Thrones.
Oh.
The one girl, you don't read the stuff I send you. You always hammering me about not doing my facts.
I've been sick.
So you're just lying around in bed all day. Yeah. You just get the tablet out and go, oh, why don't I read what Zeph sent me? This would entertain me for a few moments.
Right.
One of the girls from Game of Thrones has already been cast in it. The assumption is, I don't think Arnold is signed, sealed, and delivered. The assumption is that Arnold will be in it. Because Arnold made a statement.
Well, that's what I was saying.
Someone asked him about how old he is. He's like, well, Terminator's age.
Well, that was the whole catch point.
And I think he said it just like that.
I don't know if that was really an Australian accent or like
an Arnold accent.
Sounded like somebody with a lot of braces on.
Terminator. Well, he's a Terminator.
Yeah.
He's probably got all kinds of crap in his mouth.
Yeah, but that's what they said is, well, you know, the Terminators has a organic skin on top of their metal, you know,
Eric,
chassis.
Terminator's age.
And so it ages, which I thought is fantastically convenient, isn't it? I mean, he already looks like he's like a leathery sack wrapped around metal frame to begin with, kind of thing. Yeah.
And he's turning out, he's still turning out action movies. He had one come out this week. I've seen it advertised on TV. Sabotage, where it looks like an action movie made by the director was the guy that directed Training Day.
I got confused. Sabotage and that one that says Brick Mansions.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
I can't.
That doesn't sound like an Arnold movie.
I haven't seen anything about these movies. Like, usually I've seen something about the movies before they come out. So I think these are, you know, we talk about the downs. Movies you're releasing right now.
Yes.
Like action movies mean they were not good enough to wait till the summer to come out. And so they're just sort of sticking them in here and seeing what goes on.
Apparently that Liam Neeson movie's doing huge business nonstop.
But that's been out a few weeks. I mean, that would have been.
Oh, yeah, but still, it's not a summer movie, is it?
No. But I mean, right at this particular moment, the movies that are coming out.
But the whole point of the Terminator. The whole point of the Terminator is it comes out, it goes back in time. So really, right. Arnold's movies should come out now.
The movie I do want to see, though, is the Noah's Ark one. Is it called Noah?
What's it called? Noah, yeah. I don't do...
again, I don't do period pieces. And I'm like, yeah.
Well, this is quite mythical. Apparently, they took some liberties with the Bible.
There's not going to be a car chase.
Well, they did say other parts are very literal. Like meaning they come right out of the Bible.
Well, yeah, animals, a lot of water, building a boat. I mean,
got a pretty decent review in the local paper.
It did, which surprised me, actually, because biblical stories in modern times tend not to do that. I mean, you know, Ten Commandments and all that with Charlton Heston, that was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm surprised with Noah. You know, I guess you're hoping, I don't know. I mean, I'm not interested myself, although, like, yeah, you're right. It got some good reviews.
So, anyway, I don't have high hopes.
You're not interested in Terminator Genesis?
Yeah, whatever.
But you're a big Game of Thrones guy.
Yeah, but it's,
and he's already cast people from Game of Thrones. He should cast the little dude from Game of Thrones.
I was never a big Arnold Schwarzenegger fan to begin with.
Oh, see, I am.
And
I'm a big Arnold guy.
When you're trotting him out in these movies now, I got no interest.
Were you a Sylvester Stallone fan?
I tell you what.
If I gave you a choice between a Sylvester Stallone movie or an Arnold movie, what movie are you selecting?
Is it the,
this is where the rubber meets
best
the road.
Sylvester Stallone movie versus
yes.
the best?
Yes.
Then yes. I go best Sylvester Stallone. Rocky and Rambo beat anything that Arnold's ever done.
Oh, no way. No way. Arnold's done Predator, Terminator movies, Total Recall.
Rocky and Rambo,
these movies
both
are classics.
Better.
Oh, Predator's the greatest action movie ever. If it bleeds, we can
that's,
kill
that's
it.
As close as it gets. But Rambo,
and
you know,
those dudes were in the movie with Sylvester Stallone.
What did I just... I just saw something online talking about Rambo and how, like, that was really revolutionary.
It was that Grantland piece that Bill Simmons did where he was like a... He was
it was like the belts about the action heroes.
Which was actually...
I don't know if that's what it was. Because they talk about,
this.
Like,
you
Rambo...
Can tweet this because hopefully we'll get some sort of retweet.
Yeah, right, sure.
That was a very interesting article. It was in good fun, I thought.
Yeah. No,
I like anything. It was a way to sort of talk about who the
I think it was something else's
read
because they were talking about how, like, the big thing about Rambo is... I mean, it became a name for, like, American...
That's
military
true.
Systems, basically. Oh, you're going all Rambo. And
this is
like,
well,
you know.
I'm
going
to say this now. This is the prime difference between Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone. Sylvester Stallone's first movies of his franchises are great.
Yeah.
Rocky, which he wrote. People forget that he wrote that.
Yeah.
Rocky is a great underdog sports movie.
It's a play on Broadway now.
Oh, it is?
Did we talk about that earlier?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Maybe we'll have to. Rambo, or technically First Blood, which is what the first Rambo
that's
movie
right, that's right.
is.
That's right.
First Blood. That's a great movie about the Vietnam vet, all this kind of thing. By the time you get to the third movie of those things, they've become something else entirely moronic.
Rambo fell off like a cliff. Like
exactly.
The second one was he's going back to Vietnam. He's all buffed up because he was in a steroid phase and all that stuff.
The first one,
he was just like a...
I remember going to the cinema to see the one where he's in Afghanistan fighting the Russians.
Yeah, it was...
The Rocky movies, I mean... I don't know if you can do anything quicker than fall off a cliff, but they fell off a cliff quicker than you can fall off a cliff.
Well, Rocky IV.
Arnold.
No, which is the one with Dolph Lundgren? 3.
That's Rocky. That's 4. The 3 is Mr. T.
Rocky
loses, 2 is Rocky wins.
So 4 has
3
some,
is Mr. T,
4 has
and
some
Granddad dies.
Four
and again, if you haven't seen these Rocky movies, I'm sorry, I'm ruining it for you.
No.
4 is Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah. That has some merit in and of itself as
and
a period
five,
piece.
5... Had
that's the one with Tommy Morrison.
Tommy Morrison.
That was horrible.
And then there was a Rocky 6. There was also
that was that recent comeback thing. That didn't count.
Was that the one versus Robert De Niro, or was that a different boxing?
No,
that's a different boxing series
different
altogether.
Thing. So I was
Sylvester Stallone sequel. No, Arnold sequels have been much. Terminator 2 is better than Terminator 1.
Right, because they always
Terminator 3 isn't, but it's still pretty entertaining.
They were bad to begin with, so it was easier to do that.
Big Arnold fan.
All right. I forgot we had another topic. I was looking
Twins
at the clock
two,
and
Twins
thinking,
2 sucked.
I was looking at the clock and thinking
Although
how proud.
Well. But you do have your hands on some Milk Duds.
Well,
so
Milk Duds next. Milk Duds are chewy. We may have a lull here, but
right.
I'm going to let you start that, and I'm going to bring this all back to England.
Okay, let's do it.
There is some people, if they've heard this, they may be aware of another similar type of product that involves celebrity and securitization.
I put them all in at once.
That was a mistake.
Well, it's great, though.
Yeah.
Again, in podcasting, if the show has good content, it doesn't matter how
right.
it sounds.
We're going to put you on mute while you like slur through your chewy candy. Anyway.
So there's these two blonde astronauts fighting these apes, but there's also humans in this one who have found an old intercontinental ballistic missile, and they're worshipping it, and they're mutants, and then there's... mutants fighting apes, Charlton Heston, the dark-haired girl who doesn't speak. What's her name? Oh, what's the name of that character? Because Charlton Heston is always talking to her, and that's a very bad Charlton
Heston accent. I know what you're talking about. I mean, it's supposed to be like...
Get your hands off me, you ape.
You damn dirty ape.
You damn dirty ape. Yeah. But I can't remember the name of the girl. This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
At the New Basement Studios by the lake. I'm very excited. This is our World Cup preview special.
Ole, 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 ole.
All right, so let's get started.
So right on the front of the style section is about some guy who is wandering the nation teaching everybody about the didgeridoo.
So it's a didgeridoo.
Didgeridoo?
It's a didgeridoo. And that's the Australian thing that goes wah, wah, mm-hmm. wah. Yeah, it's a didgeridoo.
Exactly.
Not a didgeridoo.
What was your score? Do your version. Wah, wah, so my version was going to be like that.
Ooh. You sound like an old man drowning in a bathtub a little bit. There was like gurgling noises.
I think that's what a didgeridoo sounds like.
Do you want, while you get your thoughts together, do you want me to do the Close Encounters music via didgeridoo?
No. Yeah.
See, there you go.
Now, the other thing is...
We're not going there yet, because you have some other news about the parade.
I do? No, I don't know.
Yeah, because I've written Twitter down.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So they did the song, you know, the Sound of Music, I am 16 going on 17, blah, blah, blah. It's when the...
I do know that song. I haven't heard that version that you've just said.
Right. Exactly. So, but they had...
If you're one of our South Koreans, so you're completely lost to all these geographical references.
I don't even know the name, if the name of the song is I Am 16 Going on 17, but it's the one where the Nazi brown shirt kid is singing to the oldest of the Von Trapp daughters and trying to convince them to, you know...
To fully be a Nazi.
Well, I think just be with him and let him control the situation, and she shows her independence or something like that. I can't remember.
You mean be his girlfriend? When you said to be with him and let him control the situation,
That's the thing. That's the thing from the song. That's why I think find it a very weird song, because it's the whole plot line of the song is you are 16 going on 17, I'm 17 going on 18, I'll show you how the world works, I'll take care of you. I mean, that's the I'll take care of you.
No, again, I don't recognize that tune. Like yeah.
Anyway, so we should have had this thing plugged in.
Yes, so our listeners would know what musical it's from.
But it's very, like, kind of weird, because he's a Nazi, and she's like a normal, regular person, and she doesn't want to be a Nazi.
I don't know, but I feel like Nazis date, as, you know,
I can't remember if by the end of the play or movie if he reforms himself and he goes non-Nazi or something.
England are also in a difficult group.
Yep. Uruguay, Costa Rica, and Italy.
Isn't it Uruguay?
I guess it is. Yes, right. It is.
So you said Uruguay.
Yeah. All right. It's like somebody reads a teleprompter, just reads literally what's there kind of thing. Uruguay. That's who it is.
Germany, Uruguay. Yeah, it's like when I say Jaguar and you look at me funny. Because you say it's a Jaguar.
Yeah, it's kind of like
really
extra
syllables.
So
really it should be Uruguari, if that's how it's spelled, right?
G-U-A-Y at the end. So it should only be one guai.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's not get hung up on how I talk, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Right. I mean, I'm not being facetious there.
The yodeling the song. Remember the yodeling song?
You knew that yodeling.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. You know, the 2013, Wimbledon 2013 is out.
Still, you know, I think Wimbledon what they're saying 2014. Is it's now it's leaving kinda, the public zeitgeist, yeah, you know, kind of thing.
Isn't it zeitgeist?
Yeah, it could be.
Okay. Put him away. I give that guy 50 years. I'm like a crotchety old man. The little kids that shoplift, give them 20 years, they won't shoplift anymore. As you get older, you tend to be a bit more.
What would you call that voice? Is that like
a generic angry old man voice?
What nationality was that voice supposed to be? It was sort of in between American and English.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm going to sound like when I get into old age. Your brain will actually have a calvaldas. It will just collapse in on itself.
Caldera?
Whatever it's called. Just collapse in on itself. See, I do feel that the Dinosaur Park movie was very much a missed opportunity in examining the legality and everything that comes with cloning.
Okay.
Well, my point is that movie just ended up there as dinosaurs and they chase people around. But already, I think this is a far more fascinating ethics discussion.
You remember? I mean,
these are ethics.
But don't you remember Jeff Goldblum's speech? He's like, you know, you went ahead and you did all this sort of stuff, and you never really asked whether you should.
That was a pretty good Jeff Goldblum speech.
Exactly.
I'm not a very good Jeff Goldblum, but a good Jeff Goldblum
speech.
Right
now, I'm dripping little drops of water off my knuckle to talk about chaos theory. Well, I do have a bunch of random clips. I don't know. Let's see what happens if I hit this. But this was his first directorial. Oh, see, this is going to
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a technical difficulty.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's because I'm doing these off of YouTube and they always put ads in front.
When we come back, Ellen DeGeneres, you two, and Bono.
All right, so we really are now at the end. Thanks for listening, not just to this special, but for the rest of the year. All jokes aside, Eric and I really enjoy bringing you the Atlantic Voice podcast a couple of times a month. Hopefully we bring you a laugh or two, or something that you might not know. So keep an eye on the blog and your email, or Twitter, or however you follow us. Rest assured, more new episodes are just around the corner. So now, I'll let my friend Eric get the last word, after this discussion on episodic television, specifically that my belief that the show True Detective is more than a little bit of a scam.
In the same way that dumping a whole series online at once is a losing model, this is a losing model.
Let me tell you why.
I'm going to let you come back as you brought this up. I'm going to let you have the last word.
I believe that when I say it.
No, I will. I think the director thing is quite a good idea, because then a film, then a series has a style. You know, a story arc has a style. But one of the reasons we watch TV is we identify, or we want to affiliate, for want of a better word, with either actors or characters. If you replace all of those, I'm not sure in TV the idea is strong enough for you to come back. Because if you're doing it, you're doing it because you want a different show. And if you're doing a different show, then you run the risk of all the people who watch the first season of True Detective turn on for the second season of True Detective, and they're going to go, oh, this isn't what I expected, and they're going to turn it off. But if you came to the first True Detective because you liked the sort of storyline, then that needs to remain, because that'll bring you back to the second series. If you came to the first series of True Detective because you like Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson, well, at least one of them better be showing up in the second series. My last point before I let you retort. Shows that undergo major cast changes later in their run always end up going up the Swanee. X-Files, they changed the cast, wasn't the same, show was canceled.
Yeah, but they were trying to do the same thing. The whole point is it's like going to be like a series of books
lazy
or something.
Brand,
like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's like having, we're going to have a new James Bond film, but James Bond's not going to be in it. It's like these, let me give you an example. What's the latest Bourne movie? Without Jason Bourne and without Matt Damon. I'm not going to go and see that, because there's no Matt Damon.
A lot of people did.
Yeah, but put it this way. They're going to make another Bourne movie. Everyone who's in that one has been canned, and they're trying to get Matt Damon back. So to me, that is the ultimate endorsement of, ooh, this idea of trying to do, calling it the same thing and bringing in new people. That idea failed.
You need a more.
The floor is yours,
my
friend.
You need a more expansive mind as to
work. So it's my fault as an audience member.
Yes.
I didn't get,
well, you're not an audience member because you're not actually watching any of these things, so you really can't comment on these things. But anyway, it's really interesting, because it creates a unified vision for the show. It is like much more like a movie. We had the one with Elizabeth Moss that she won the Golden Globe for, the Below the Lake. What was it?
Above the Lake. It's either Above or Top of the Lake.
Top of the Lake, right. That was real interesting. It was
different from the bottom land.
You know how I feel about arcs. I want my stories to have beginning, middles, and ends.
Like
our show. By setting them this way, well, I don't know about that. But by setting them up this way, now your season has a real arc. It's not, oh, we're gonna go to the end, and we're gonna have these threads that have to carry through to the next episode, so that the people can kind of pick it up and do this sort of stuff.
And that's fine.
Beginning, middle, end, just like a story is supposed to have. Better work of art. Better thing to watch, and you just put it under a brand name of True Detective.
And that's my point. This is just cheap branding.
What makes it cheap branding? Why is it cheap branding?
Because everyone who thinks True Detective is good, you're going to think that our audience are dumb enough to come back next year to an entirely different show with an entirely different cast, but because we're calling it the same thing, you're going to stay with us for another 8 episodes. I understand what you're saying.
So when you say, HBO puts out multiple series, would you call HBO cheap branding by putting HBO's name on it? I mean, the whole point is, if it becomes a stamp of a type of approach or a type of show, it's like a channel within a channel that you're going to watch, because you'll come back and say, I want to see True Detective because I was really interested in what they did last year with that season.
Let me blow a hole in your theory.
What happened to my last word?
Oh, okay, sorry. Well, because your last word is just full of holes. I mean, you're just asking for me to hammer you.
Okay, go ahead. What is it?
I understand what you say about HBO. HBO is a brand, and you go, ooh, I like what HBO does. Mm-hmm. That being said, HBO do serious stuff. They do comedies. They do documentaries. The brand HBO stands doesn't stand for content. It stands for quality. So you're going to go, okay, I'm going to give it a go. Oh, that's not my thing. That doesn't mean it's bad. It's not my thing. HBO brings something else out. I'm still drawn to it because HBO is a mark of quality. It's slightly different at a more micro level. If you call your TV show True Detective and it stars Matthew and Woody and it's about detectives, that's great. Season 2 can be an entirely different story arc. It can be about detectives. But there still needs to be something from Season 1 in Season 2 for me to go, this is True Detective.
Why?
Otherwise, it's just another cop show. Then just call it something else. Call it Murder in El Paso.
You're hung up on a title. The point is...
No, I am hung up on a title because it's a lazy way to try and get me to stay with the show. You're not bringing me the characters I invested in. You're just going to bring me another murder show. Or whatever it's
just,
about.
Just like HBO brings you a different drama. When they finish The Wire, you know, they did something else. When they finish Oz, they move to The Wire. When they
then
go to this,
then be confident enough to call it something else.
Why?
Why try and brand it?
Should they change the name of HBO every other year? Because, you know, you got to be confident enough to call it something else. You don't have a continuity between things.
No, but if you're going to call something
the same production team is putting together the series each year and is putting together things and it's just different cast. I mean, really, who has more to do with whether the show is good? The people who produce it and write it and direct it or the people who are in the cast?
I still feel that there's something sort of gimmicky about it, though. It doesn't sit right with me. If you've created great characters and a storyline that you believe in, then ultimately either bring some of those elements with you. But if you just basically get a whole new set of people in, at some moment it cheapens what they do.
Should they have changed James Bond when they changed all the actors and rebooted it?
No, but the characters exist. True Detective is new characters. True Detective is a whole new thing. That's what you've just said to me. That's my point.
I think it sounds like cheap branding to just cobble in a whole bunch of new people and revised versions of James Bond and just call it James Bond. Should be called John Bond because it's really different. No, it's not the same character. No. They've changed what he is underlying that character.
I'm not going to win this argument, so
Watch it before you start critiquing this idea. I think you sound like an old fuddy-duddy. This is the way the series are done, and it should always be done this way. This is a new, interesting thing. TV has changed. TV is not the same thing it was in 1970 and you're watching Dragnet. It's a new thing. There's different ways of doing this stuff. This is a new way of approaching the storytelling.
Let me hit you up with some cerebrality, though. That's a new word I've just invented. Cerebrality. It's like being cerebral. I understand that TV has changed and it's not like watching Dragnet. But in a weird way, the way to get to quality is the same. Good writing, good characters, good directing. Why do you need to, let me just call it True Detective in case any of our viewers leave it. No, just go, we're just doing a new cop show and this is called such and such and these are the characters.
It's just a name for the bigger umbrella.
At some moment, they have to do something in True Detective 2, let's just call it True Detective 2, that echoes the original. Otherwise, they are selling something.
It'll be a crime drama.
But more than that, though. It needs to be a crime. Let me say this. If True Detective is about, you know, cops and cynicism and whatever the underlying themes are, True Detective 2 has to carry all those themes. You're right. You can change the cast. You can change the story. But, you know, if True Detective 2, I don't know, there has to be something where it is similar stylistically or in tone to the first one. Or the hook. Some of the hooks have to exist. Otherwise, you're just taking a name and slapping it on another production and hoping that the viewer is going to go, oh, yeah, I saw the last one, so I'm going to watch this one.
Well, you'll never know whether there's a thread between the two because you're not going to watch them. And on that note,
this has been The Atlantic Voice. Wait a minute, before we sign out.
No, we're done.
Okay.
That was my last word.
This has been The Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just endured Eric and Zeph on The Atlantic Voice Podcast. For more, you can follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice. You can email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. Or you can find this show and others on Libsyn.com or on iTunes. the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.